Anatoly Klov-Tobias won Olympic gold in the laser radial at the 2008 Games in China. And Anna is also a phenomenally fit athlete, having won the CrossFit Games Masters for the 35 to 39 age category back in 2018. And she's still going strong today. But firstly, some introductions. Hi, my name's Andy Rice. I'm in Scotland today. And Hamish, you're over in New Zealand on your boat. How's things going?
Yeah, my internet's pretty bad, so we'll keep it minimal. But yeah, homeless and on the boat.
All right, so we'll all get out a small violin for Hamish on his boat. But wish you well out there on the bright blue seas of just off Auckland. And let's introduce our guest for the evening. Very, very pleased to have Anna Tobias with us. Hi, Anna. Where are you today?
Hi, thanks for having me. I am actually at my gym right now in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And you're in what you call the small room, right? You've got the big room next door, but there's a big refurb going on. So what goes on at your gym?
So it's primarily a CrossFit gym. So we have CrossFit classes, have 8 classes throughout the day. We have a couple additional fitness classes as well. But this room here that I'm currently in is our kids' room. So we have our kids program, which runs in the evenings back here. And they have free reign of the area with the coaches, and they get fit.
Excellent. Well, remember, people, that this is your opportunity to ask one of the best sailors in the world and also a phenomenal athlete about your own fitness questions. This is all about how you can get fitter to make sure that you go faster. And Anna, the reason why I think you're so interesting is obviously you are a phenomenal sailor. You won Olympic gold in 2008, and you had other Olympic campaigns where you probably came pretty close as well. We might go into the highs and lows of your campaign, but primarily I'm interested in talking to you about fitness, because you've got into CrossFit in a major way, and you're world class in CrossFit. Some of us on this call might not even know what CrossFit is, so we might even ask you to give us a brief definition of that.
The reason why I think it's so interesting.
Just make sure that you're on mute if you can. I'm just hearing a little bit of feedback of my own voice in my head. But Anna, how seriously did you take fitness during your radial days when you were campaigning for the games and ended up winning that gold in China 2008?
Yeah, I think it was a huge part of my program. I didn't train the same way then as I do now. I was much more into endurance sports. I did some weightlifting, but I wouldn't say I was very strong at all. But it was definitely a high priority for me, and it just didn't feel right. My day didn't feel right unless I focused on fitness. I was never really a big radial sailor. Like, I struggled to maintain my weight at where it was. So I had to like counter that by being as fit as I could to be able to hang as long as I could in the breeze.
Right. And at some point, I'm guessing because of your focus on fitness, because of not being quite big enough for the boat, the fitness became maybe the overriding interest for you beyond the sailing itself. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think so. It allowed me to hang on like the long windy days, and allowed me, you know, the days where it was like damage control because it was so windy, my damage was less than it could have been if I was less fit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And looking back on what you know now about fitness, how would you go about your radial campaign differently today, if at all?
Yeah, I would do a lot more in the gym, weight training, core training. Definitely, although I was young and not really injury prone at the time, but would definitely come off with, you know, sore backs, sore hip flexors, primarily because I didn't train it. I always thought my core was super strong, but didn't really know that much about like the way I was training and how to train properly. So definitely integrate a lot more style of what I'm doing now, because it can be endurance, it can be explosive, it can be, you know, strength, power. It's everything now. So I would implement that into my training that I would have done back then.
Okay. Hamish, I'm going to test out your internet and just see if we can get a good response out of you on this subject, because training the opposites is something that you talk about in Road to Gold. And And you came up with core training before people even knew how to spell core. So just tell us a little bit about that and just see if we can get you in on this conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Thanks, Anna. I'm just on Erika's phone now, so it's working all right, Andy?
Yeah, so far so good.
Nice. Yeah, okay. Yeah, different internet provider. Yeah, and I'm really fascinated to hear all about this fitness stuff because, I'm a novice, really. But I did, try hard back in the day in the 80s. There was only one gym in Auckland, and that was a boxing gym called Clive Green. But I recognized right away that I needed to work really hard on my core in order to sustain what I was doing on the boat. So, yeah, I've always sort of thought of the foundation plank of fitness, and I'd love to hear more about what you've learned in that area.
Yeah, so Anna, let's ask you about that. Training the opposites, is that a phrase that you recognize, and tell us what you know about that?
No, I heard it for sure. You got to train, I guess, opposites, push-pull, right? So the way, taking it to core particularly, like there's a big concept or the thought of core being just like the abs, but in reality, core is the entire midsection. And so often as sailors or athletes or just generally when we go to the gym, we're like, oh, I'm going to do core day. And we just really work the abdominals in front of them. We forget to work the rest of our body. The rest of the midsection. And so I think it's really important that, and I didn't focus on this as much back then, I wish I had, but focusing on training, the obliques, focus on training, your back, your lower back, and being able to hold your body in a good, powerful position, more with a gymnastic sort of sense to the body positioning, to get strong in that sense. I do absolutely think you have to train opposites, because if you only train one way, you're only going to get one strong one way. The beauty of CrossFit is that it is functional fitness, meaning it's designed to keep you healthy in life. And I really like the methodology of training that we do because it does train every aspect of it. So even if you want to take it sports specific, you still end up training the opposite side. So if you're primarily, well, sailing, right? We're primarily a pulling sport. We don't do much pushing, but the time that you do need to push or the time you do need to brace yourself because you fell across the 49er or something, you need to catch yourself. You need to have that reciprocal power to be able to catch yourself and not injure yourself when you need to.
Okay, well, we might dig in a little bit more into that subject, but I'm going to encourage some more questions by asking our first questioner, Greg, to come in and put your question directly to Anna. So, Greg, let's kick off with some of the points that you want to raise with Anna. Let's get you in.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, guys. I'm sure you can hear me. I'll just show a video. Yeah, I'll just show a video, Andy, if you like, just to support the bandwidth. Otherwise, I'm happy to come on. But
go video if you can. It seems to be fine at the moment.
Good. Hi there. Hi, everyone. So my question, Anna, but first of all, congrats on your, I know it's a while back now, but congrats on your 2008 success in gold. That's really well done. But I'm really excited to get some perspective from you with regards to nutrition and hydration. And it's pretty much focused on race day. So wanted to know if you can cover off. So let me first explain why I'm asking the question. So if you look at the last point that I put there, I've taken a pretty much high fat, low carb nutrition approach, kind of reduced my carb intake a lot. So, and I've seen the benefit of really reducing my weight down and just all around feeling so much better. But it really then is about how do you put on race day? And that's the tricky one. So in terms of both hydration and nutrition, because you could be racing four races without coming back to shore. So that's the one question. And the class I'm racing is not a dinghy, it's a board. It's a windsurfer. So it's about, how do you manage that? And then secondly, in terms of the recovery straight after racing, in terms of nutrition, and then, how does that fit into the high fat, low carb approach? I'd just like to get your perspective there because that's one of the challenges I'm facing at the moment. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, and I'm glad that it's working for you. I'm a I want to say the way I eat is I eat more paleo style. So it's not high fat, low carb, but it's not processed carbs. So my carbs come from vegetables and fruits. So it's probably similar in the sense of like, yeah. I'm not eating like grains and oatmeals and stuff like that. I would say on when I do know it is going to be like a windy or super long aggressive day, maybe I would have a little bit of like white rice or oatmeal or something for breakfast, just to have a little bit more carbs in my body. And then, but eat a good, like nutritious breakfast so that I'm going to have energy on the water. And then on the water, it's about eating a bar probably because it's easy just to stuff in your life jacket or pocket or coach boat, whatever. You know, we used to eat a bar called the Perfect Bar, which is primarily almond butter or peanut butter. And so it's more on the fats versus like high carbs. And it still has carbs in it. It has a little bit of protein in it too, but those are the bars that I used to eat because when they fit into kind of the way I ate. And, you know, they've got, I think, 300 calories in it. So it would last you a good race, no problem. And then right when you're done, as soon as you get back ashore, it's definitely about getting in a meal. Right? So if you've been out there for 3, 4, 5 hours, you need to get a meal in. And that meal probably would be slightly higher than your normal carb intake than what you would have just to replenish because you haven't been eating that much carbs out there. And by when I say that, like you don't have to go full extreme of like strictly only carbs, but just a little bit more carbs, definitely getting in your proteins. So chicken or something along those lines, some vegetables, and some fats. So whether you're throwing in avocados, but given that if you're eating something like peanut butter and all that on the water, you don't necessarily need as much fats because you've been having that throughout the day. Getting in a protein shake too, I think that's really important. You can have that as soon as you get ashore. You can make it before you de-rig, you know, and down that because it's going to get you some water and protein in you straight away. As far as hydration on the water, I drink a lot of water. My skippers and crews are always like, how do you go to the bathroom so much? And I just drink a lot just because I get thirsty a lot. But one of my big drinks is that I like electrolyte drinks, but I make my own. So I make honey and salt. I mix honey and salt together.
Okay.
I wish I could give you a recipe for it, but I just kind of like eyeball it and taste it. And if it needs one or more of the other, I just add it. But that way I'm getting in some sugars from the honey and it's more natural sugars than the actual regular sugar and stuff. And then the salt is just there to, you know, replenish what I've sweated out.
Okay. No, that's really useful. So, you know, the question is around whether it's water, you know, or it's a mixture. You know, that's often the discussion about whether water is sufficient enough if you are nutritioning well versus these electrolyte drinks. Like a Cytomax or, you know, the Power Bar stuff, et cetera, which are very loaded with carbohydrates, et cetera. But that's some good pointers. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Good question to kick off with. So please do take advantage of the fact that we've got Anna here. And Anna, tell me... obviously, when you were selling the radial, you know that you're in a high fitness sport. But in other things that you did, for example, in the Mack racing, yes, the Elliott keelboat still required you to hike. But sailing is such a complex, multifaceted sport. And it's easy for us to be tempted into thinking that it's such a small part of, say, keelboat racing, you don't really need to concentrate on it. So how did your focus on fitness change from going from the radial to, if I can say so, one of the hot favorites for London 2012? It didn't work out for you, but I bet it wasn't due to lack of fitness. We can maybe dig into the reasons why if we have time, but hate to bring up the bits of the past you maybe don't want to go over again, but when you went into that three person campaign, what was the fitness focus for you?
It was great. I didn't really do that much. My crew did all the work, which was awesome, and they were fantastic. So for me, the fitness was being able to hike and not really worry about hiking, play the traveler, and that not actually be able to detract from my mental game. Because so much of the match racing was you had to be on and responsive straight away and not getting tired. So if I could keep myself physically fit and not actually get tired physically, that would allow my brain to stay more alert. And so therefore I could, you know, be faster at responding to moves or making plays on the race course.
Okay. And then you moved into the 49er FX and you came very close to qualifying for Tokyo 2020. It was pretty much down to the last race of the last World Championships before the Games, if I remember rightly. Just tell us a little bit about that campaign and again, what your fitness focus was now that you were in the front of an FX.
So the fitness side of it was awesome because it was such a physical boat. Like I was in like the best place ever. Loved it. And the fitness side really paid off. I think it allowed me to get a grasp on crewing really quickly. And again, my skipper Paris was amazing. So she had a lot of patience and definitely bailed me out of a lot of situations. But the fitness, I think, played a really big part in allowing me to be able to do what I needed to do at the front of the boat. And again, kind of, especially in the early stages, whilst we were learning, not get as tired as quickly so that we could get better at what we were doing faster. You know, and it was a really tough battle in that class. And, you know, in the end, Steph and Maggie won, and they deserved to. They beat us on the day. And, you know, that's what it comes down to in the sport of sailing. But I really do think that our fitness allowed us to catch up as much as we did and get to where we got to over the, I think, 2.5 years that we sailed.
And when you look at the sailing world and coming from the CrossFit world as you do now, how much money are we leaving on the table as sailors, even at the Olympic level?
We can all be, you mean like how much fitter can we be?
Yeah, yeah.
We can all be a lot fitter. But again, it's all, we can definitely all be fitter, but you know, we have to look at like what we're doing. So there's a lot that goes into our sport. And I would say from when I was sailing the radial to what the radial sailors are now, like totally different fitness, like way fitter, you know, way better all around athletes than they were when I was sailing. And I think in general, the sailing world's progressing that right, the correct way. It's a balance now of balancing gym time and sailing time. And it's a bit of a sometimes, you know, it's a windy day. If you're going laser sailing, do you really want to go to the gym and do squats before you go out? You know, and there's arguments either way, like, no, well, no, I want to, you know, be 100% for sailing. You know, but if you go to the gym after sailing and you've been hiking all day, well, your squats aren't going to be that good, but the squats are what's going to make you strong. So do you want to do the squats first and then go sailing afterwards, you know, and be a little bit not as strong on the water? So it's a tough balance that we have to do. And I think some of that is very person dependent. It's something that needs to be talked about with coaches. I was always a believer that I would just go to the gym super early, rest as long as I could possibly recover, and then go sailing hard. And so I have basically, it was a 2-session day, but there was as much gap between the 2 sessions as possible so that I got the most out of both sessions.
How much would you adjust that program in the gym depending on the weather forecast, whether it's gonna be a light or windy day?
Generally didn't. That I would say, I don't know if this sounds bad. I'd say in the FX, the only time I didn't go to the gym was during our 2 World Championships, which are our trials. Other than that, I would go to the gym all the time. And part of it is for me is like my mental, like my day is not complete unless I go to the gym, right? Like it's just my little outlet, my me time. But in general, no, it was all part of training. It was part of the process. So I did it. But, you know, fitness to me is a very big part of my life, a very important part of my life. And so I, like I said, I would just get up at 5:30 and go to the gym, get it done, be done by 7. If training was at 12 and I had 5 hours to recover, get fresh and go sailing.
Okay. And you said it sounds bad, and I'm not sure what you were referring to there other than maybe breaking your normal routine. What were you referring to there?
That maybe like I should have taken time off and joined some regattas and not gone to the gym. But, you know, it's something we talked to through as a team between me and Paris of, hey, I feel better if I go to the gym. Is that okay? You know? And whether it would be detracting from my sailing actually on the water because I might be too tired. But I never felt like it did. But, you know, you always feel one way and what's perceived is another way. So I don't know if that was a bad thing that I like didn't really take off days from the gym and you know, throttled back a little bit when it was windy. But to me, it was just that's what kind of made my day complete. That's kind of what got me ready for sailing and racing and training, whatever it was part of my routine.
Okay,
but so it's not necessarily everyone's, you know, I'm not saying everybody should go to the gym every day before they go sailing in a 20-knot day. No, that's what worked for me.
Yeah, and so I get the impression that the fitness training, the strength training, is also your mental training as well. Is that what you're alluding to?
A little bit. It's a way to be competitive with myself, to push myself to the limits. What I did in the gym was always harder than what I did on the water physically. So if I push myself to my limits in the gym and it hurt and it, you know, I would never feel that on the water. Right. So I always knew I could keep going and push harder on the water because I never actually hit that same point of pain on the water. I might have been out of breath, but like my muscles weren't burning the same way that they would burn in the gym during a workout.
Now, Hamish did discover the only gym in Auckland early on in his 470 career back in his teens, but he's very much a proponent of cross training and different kinds of sports. I don't think Hamish likes being indoors very much. So he can answer for himself in a moment, but I'm interested in why you, Anna, ended up going for the gym as opposed to some of the other options you might have pursued for fitness.
Other options as in cycling and
running? Cycling, stand-up paddle boarding, surfing, whatever it might be.
So first off, surfing's out because I'm terrified of the water, so that would never be an option.
Hang on, we got to stop there. Hang on, what's going on here?
I don't know.
You're terrified of the water.
I can't be in the water. I'm okay on a boat, but in the water, it's not a good situation. I don't like it. I'm not comfortable. It's odd, I know, but it is what it is. I just try not to capsize too much. We'll fall off the boat.
Well, I did wonder about that. So your capsize record is probably pretty good. You probably didn't do that very often.
I tried not to. And if I was in a position where I was fighting for my skipper for the centerboard, I would fight hard to not be in the water.
Right.
No, I'm just, it's silly. You know, in the middle of the race, you're not thinking about it. You just get up and go. But, you know, I'm not a fan of the water, so I don't surf. I don't really do stand-up paddle boating. It's just not, I don't feel comfortable doing it. But no, I did do a lot of, when I was laser sailing, actually, a lot of my training was biking and cycling or running. I was training leading into the Olympics. I set myself a goal that, you know, after the Olympics, or what was it? Probably 2 months after the Olympics, so in October. Yeah, I did a half Ironman. So that was kind of like my training for the radial. Like I got super fit in running, biking, swimming. For me, doing what I do is a different outlet. Like I can't talk sailing all day. I can't focus on sailing all day. I need a different outlet. And whether it's, you know, in the CrossFit gym, if I'm going for a run or whatever it is, that's my different athletic outlet. And that's, for me, what works. So I picked different sports to do. I found CrossFit after running, half marathons every other week or something like that. When I found a CrossFit gym and went to a gym and found that I could be so freaking sore after a 10-minute workout, I was like, why am I spending an hour and a half, 2 hours running when I could do a 10-minute workout and be as sore or more sore and see more gains from it?
Okay,
but that's what worked for me.
Right. So that's interesting. For those of us that are challenged by time and just struggle to fit in training time to get fit, sounds like CrossFit offers a lot of benefits there.
Yeah. So your general, like obviously when I was training for the CrossFit Games, there was a lot more training that went into it. But, you know, a general, like we call it GPP, so general public training. So people that are just looking to be healthier, like, yeah, we have a class, we do a strength session, and then you do a workout that's anywhere from, you know, 5-6 minutes to 20 minutes. But at the end of it, you're laid out on the floor out of breath, you know, and probably going to come into the gym next day and still be sore. And I've been doing it for 12 years and every week I'm sore, which means that I'm constantly working my muscles to get better.
Right, right. And what can sailors learn from CrossFit athletes, and what can CrossFit athletes learn from sailors?
CrossFit athletes don't really generally know what sailing is. So, I think it's a completely different sport. You know, they say CrossFit is the sport of fitness. And, you know, I bet if we put sailors, you know, the thing is, right, like when you go hiking, the only thing that really trains hiking is hiking. Right. So you can be as strong as you want on a squat, but until you get out in the hiking strap, you know, it's a totally different game. You know, so I think like for CrossFit athletes, they'd just be learning a new sport and getting fit in different ways. But I think one thing that sailors could learn from CrossFit is, you know, the adaption to everything. So you come into the gym, you either haven't looked at what the workout is, or you only found out like a few hours before you came to the gym as to what the workout was going to be. And you just adapted mentally to be like, right, well, this is what I'm going to do, and this is going to hurt, but it's going to kind of be fun to do. And so it's kind of a little bit of that mental training of like, right, well, you're in a situation, let's say it's a movement that you don't really like doing, but you're going to do it anyway. So you're putting yourself, like that translates to in a race where you're in a spot that you don't necessarily like being in, or you had a bad start and you're back in the race. How do you mentally stay strong and push through? So I think it trains a lot of like the mental side of sailing CrossFit, and obviously gets you fitter. And I think too, what else is like, it is the similarities of it is that they're different every day. You know, there's no sailboat race that's ever identically the same. You might want to go the same race, the same track on the race course, but the waves are different. The puff's different. You know, it's always different in some way. Same with the workouts, they're always different. You know, and you might repeat a workout a year later, but you're going to attack it differently. So, yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. And so actually more similarities there between CrossFit and sailing than maybe I'd realized. Now we've got a question from a great sailor, Mael Frascari. Let's see if we can get you in, Mael, to ask your question directly to Anna. Come on, Mael, don't let us down. Let's give her a little bit longer. No, she's in the car. Okay. So Mael Frascari is a NACRA 17 world champion, does all the hard work at the front of the NACRA 17, which maybe, Anna, is even harder than what you were doing in the front of an FX. But anyway, her question is, what was your usual training schedule crewing in the FX? For example, from 7 to 10 days on sailing and gym and 7 days off, just sailing off. So for the winter period specifically, that she's asking, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I would generally train most weeks at least 6 if not 7 days a week in the gym for sure, always year round. And then the sailing, when I was there, because Paris and I lived in different parts of the country, when we got together we sailed every day. We very rarely took a day off, you know, so we'd go 10 12 13 days on sailing and then maybe have a couple days off and hit it again. So yes, my off days would be like gym only days. You know, if I was super spent from travel or something, then yeah, I would take gym and sailing off. But for the most part, like you said, it would just be the off would be the sailing part of it off. Would I change it? No, because again, for me, that's what kind of kept me mentally, physically. So that's what I would do all the time.
Great. Mael, if you've got any follow-up questions on that, please send them in and I'll ask them as well. But meanwhile, let's go to Walt Spivak. Walt, let's get you in to ask your question.
Hey, Anna. Good to see you.
You too, Walt.
Started doing La Cruz a couple months ago. It sounds like it was a good week. It was good.
A great week. Next time.
Okay. More whales. Just maybe shout out or describe how someone would put together, say, a six-month training program if they're not at it 365 days a year?
Yeah, so I think you got to approach it as a building period. So the end of that 6 month is your peak, I'm guessing, right? So it's towards the worlds. So yeah, you're going to be building it up. So you want to start with basically your general basis of fitness, like your basics, right? So building up your basic strength of squat, basic squats, so back squats, you know, a bit of deadlifting, doing some core, working on the push-pull movements, super general basic movements. And then from there, you can build out a cycle. Probably in a six-month period, you're going to have 2, maybe 3 cycles that you can build on strength-wise. And then each of those cycles build on. 6 months is a short period to go from like 0 to 100 as far as fitness. So it's a lot of discipline training and listening to your body. How you start depends on what you have actually been doing. So if your 6 month period is coming from 0, right, then we're starting much slower versus, okay, well, I've been doing some stuff. Maybe I've been going like 2 times a week or 3 times a week to the gym, but now I'm ready to start going 5 times a week. Still with that, you can do a little bit more, but you're still not diving in full on straight away because you've got to let your body adapt to what it's doing. So it might take 2 weeks for your body to adapt, and then you can start adding on more and more from there. So if we're talking about getting ready for Worlds in Mexico, I'd say get on the hiking bench for one. And then obviously getting the gym program going in there too.
I'm actually going down there next week, so we'll get some time on the water.
There you go.
Well, you've got time for more questions if you want to do any follow-up on that. So do you have anything else you want to ask, Anna?
Maybe later, but not right at the moment. Thanks.
Okay, no worries. Nice to see you all. Anna, I saw you in Amman just before Christmas at the Youth Worlds, and you were team leader for Team USA. So tell us, how much coaching have you done, and what did you learn from that role at the Youth Worlds?
I'm doing a lot more coaching lately. Since we lost the trials, I've been primarily coaching and mostly coaching the radial squad. Learning a ton from the coaching, which is really cool. And then being team leader at Youth Worlds was a great experience. It was very overwhelming with the amount of stuff that I had to do. I wasn't prepared for it really, as it was like a last minute change because of PCR tests and stuff. But it was a great experience being able to like kind of oversee like a team and make sure everything kind of runs smoothly. Learning wise, it was a big learning experience on how to communicate with a team in general, a whole team versus like, you know, my squad, but I know on a much more personal level than I do the entire team. So learning how to communicate with the whole team and getting them all organized and motivated was really a cool learning experience throughout the week. And, you know, the team started performing better and better throughout the week. And I think as we kind of came together more and more as a group.
Okay. What are you enjoying most about the coaching for yourself?
I really enjoy the group of girls I work with because they're super motivated, great squad. They all work together, which is awesome to see. But I think it's really interesting to learn, the way I've learned sailing is from doing it myself and feeling it and, you know, from a perspective of looking at a sail from the cockpit looking up. And now I'm looking at it from behind the boat or from the side of the boat and learning how to explain what I would be feeling in the boat. Learning to explain how to do something versus just being like, well, just do this. You know? And I think it's really interesting because it teaches you how to be better sailor and how to understand things better. Because, you know, you would just do something in the boat just because it felt right and not necessarily know why. And now I'm trying to learn now I'm learning the whys of why I did everything. And I think it's really interesting.
Sometimes the best sailors don't make the best coaches because a lot of what you do is so instinctive and therefore breaking down what comes to you instinctively, I imagine, must be very difficult. Hamish, have you got a comment on that? When you were asked to start coaching the Japanese and asking to break down what you did so well in the 470, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, like Anna, it was quite frustrating at first. You know, you had to do it and you didn't really know why. So, you know, and sometimes my response was just do it. It works, you know, and that's clearly not a good way to coach. But I was young and, you know, I think a large part of early coaching was learning to coach. You know, you had the content, but you really didn't have the delivery. And, you know, over the years, I've realized that less is more for sure. And just you know, allowing people to make their own mistakes and waiting for them to come to you and ask the question rather than, you know, just keep, you know, pouring more information on. So it's been a big journey for me. And I think, you know, when I look back on the switching period, when I did a little bit of coaching and a little bit of sailing, I think it was huge growth for me in both areas. You know, I learned a lot that I could apply to my sailing, and I learned a lot about coaching that could help other sailors. So I really think everybody should have a go at coaching. If you want to improve your sailing skills, you know, you should have a go being on the race committee boat, a lot of things we've said as well in the Road to Gold, just it's amazing what you can learn about starting, just being on the race committee boat, being the race committee. So, yeah, really, really interested to hear Anna's comments there. And it sounds like she did a great job over at the youth.
Well, yeah, we've certainly got some praise for you from James Peterson, who says that you were a great team leader in the Youth Worlds in Amman. James, if you want to come in and elaborate on that, we'd love to hear from you, but I'll assume that's just a nice comment for Anna, but you're very welcome to join us if you'd like to come on. Meanwhile, Pablo has a question. He can't ask it directly. And actually, it touches on something, Pablo, I wanted to ask Anna anyway, which is you've said you've spent the last 12 years feeling sore. So I want to know when is the right amount of sore and when is too much sore? That whole thing of when is too much training, too much for the body. So if you could answer that first, Anna, and then I'll dig into Pablo's question more specifically.
So I think it's very important to listen to your body. And I think that's something that athletes don't do very well for a long time. You have to understand and feel your body. And there's so many cool technology things today that we can wear that help us with this too. You know, there's a difference between like, I'm tired because I didn't really sleep that much or I can't be bothered to go do something because I'm tired versus, no, my body's actually wrecked. I need to take time off. And I think a lot of that is a bit of trial and error, but learning your body and understanding, right, okay, this is when I need to take time off. Like I said, there's tons of tools out there that you can use now. So there's like the Apple Watch, the Whoop bands. I'm not really much experience with Fitbit and stuff like that, but things that can tell you how your body is responding. And when you hit a certain, recovery point, okay, now it's probably a time to take time off and then let your body recover and then get going again. But it also, you know, you have to make sure we're eating enough. We have to make sure we're hydrating. As far as stretching, you need to just do your stretching, right? You can't just go into the gym cold, start lifting, crank out a high intensity workout, and then not do anything afterwards and then expect your body to be able to repeat that on a day by day basis. But you need to do the stretching. You need to warm your muscles up. You need to cool your muscles down. You need to do your mobility. If you can't squat properly, there's no point in doing squats until you figure out how to squat, because otherwise you're going to injure yourself. So making sure that you're really being super detailed and meticulous about getting your body prepped for what it's doing. And then once you've crushed it, doing what it needs to recover on the other side.
And that thing that I've heard about, if you're feeling ill above the neck, then you can carry on training. If you're feeling ill below the neck, then you should stop training. What's your take on that?
I mean, that's a one rule, I guess. If you're feeling ill below the neck, take some time.
Well, so if you've got a head cold, it's okay to keep on working out. If you've got a chest, if you've got something on the chest or something like that, that's more serious. You've actually got to listen to the body and take a rest.
No, you should listen to your body anyway, because here's our theory on this too, is and it's really, really hard as athletes and competitive athletes to do this, I think. But let's say it's not even a cold or a flu or something. It's just like, you have a strained muscle, a tweaked muscle. If let's say I hurt my shoulder, but then I just go into the gym and I do squats on squats on squats on squats and wreck my legs, right? Like I'm just going to be super sore on my legs. Well, my body now has to choose which one is it going to recover. Is it going to heal my legs or is it going to heal my shoulder? And if I wreck my legs so much that my body decides that my legs need the recovery, then it's going to work on that and it's going to forget my shoulder, or it's going to split it and it's going to take longer for both to heal. So I'm very big believers in, like, if you do injure yourself, you need to be careful and make sure that your body can actually recover from the injury. Same with colds. If you've got a cold, don't go into the gym and sweat it out. One, it's rude for everybody else that's in the gym and the coaches that are there. But two, like, let your body recover, right? Like, there's a reason it's feeling the way it's feeling. Let your body recover. It'll recover faster, and then you can get back in the gym and continue on.
Great. Really, really good answers there. Thank you. Now, the questions are starting to flood in, so let's see if we can get onto all of them. Now, Pablo, you've got a follow-up question, which I'm going to start with first, because Anna mentions fitness gadgets. So which one would you recommend? Sleep rings? What would you recommend?
I think whatever works for you. I wear the Whoop strap. I wear it on my arm, and I use that a lot. And it tracks, you know, tracks my recovery, it tracks my sleep patterns, it tracks my workouts. And I think it's quite interesting. There's the Garmin watches that you can do. They all, I mean, you have to basically take them as a grain with a grain of salt. Like, they're not 100% accurate. They're giving you a best guess and a really good idea of how you're feeling, but it's not like they're not, I don't believe, are really perfectly accurate. So I think it's really find something that gives you the information that you want to use and start wearing that and give it a go.
Great, thank you. And Pablo's main question regarding rest and recovery, on a usual basis, how many hours do you plan to sleep per day and how does this differ in competition blocks and training blocks? And if you can train weekly, what water days, rest days ratio did you do? We've maybe addressed a little bit of that just then, but the first bit about sleep, what's your answer on that?
How much do I plan to sleep?
Yeah.
I'd like to
plan to sleep.
I'd like to try and get at least 7.5-8 hours. That's a really, really solid night. Generally, it's closer to that 5 to 6 hours. The more you can sleep, so 7.5-8 hours. If you're a person that needs 9 hours, get your 9 hours sleep. I think sleep is definitely very important. Does my sleep differ in competition blocks? Again, it goes back to, I would love to go to sleep at that time, but if I have work to do or I'm just super nervous or something like that, then I'll get the sleep that I can get and do the best I can with it. What was the other one? Train weekly on the water days. If we were there regularly, we'd probably do, I don't know. I think it depends on you individually, and I think you can treat on the water days similar to fitness days. Like, if you are feeling good and you want to keep going, keep going. I think you always want to keep the hunger there. Like, you never want to get to the point where you're like, all right, I'm tired of doing all of this stuff, because then you don't really have much motivation to get out on the water the next day. But as long as you're hungry for something, hungry to keep learning, I think you keep going. And then just as maybe you start getting that hint of like, oh, I'm really tired, I'm not really feeling this right now, then maybe it's a good time to stop before you actually get to that quote unquote burnout phase in a training session.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, Mael, we know Mael can't ask this directly, but she's curious about cardio for brain function, which I think you touched on when we talked about the match racing leading up to London 2012. It's something that Hamish talks about on the Road to Gold course, but anything more you want to say about that, Anna?
I think the fitter you are, the easier you're going to be able to function mentally on things, because your body's not having to focus on your body, and that, like, your body's going to subconsciously be able to handle what you're asking it to do, and it basically frees up your brain to do what you want it to do and think.
Okay. I'm going to whistle through these questions because they are coming in thick and fast. Let's see if we can get Alex in to ask your question, because this is something that I think Anna is eminently qualified to answer. So Alex, if you can ask your question about Ilka 7 racing at club and national level, let's see if we can get you in. Is Alex there? Let's quickly ask that. I mean, this, so Alex does club racing and the nationals in the Ilka 7, and despite being fit and going to the gym regularly, is struggling to compete in 17 plus knots, as only weighs around 74 kilos compared with, say, 86 kilos. That sounds a bit high to me, actually, for the Ilka 7. But what would you do? How would you train mentally and physically if changing the class is not an option?
Really work on trying to gain weight, because, you know, you're just at a physical disadvantage there. There's not much you can do. You can hike as hard as you want, but if you put somebody that's 86 kilos next to you hiking as hard as they can, or hiking as hard as you, they're just going to beat you, because I think the physics of sailing. But really, I think you approach the days as damage control days, I call them, right? So if it's a condition where you're like, right, this is not my jam, this is not where I'm going to really crush it, I'm going to do the best I can, you're going to sail the race and reduce the amount of points you're going to collect in the day. You know, so make a 20th, a 15th, you know, instead of worrying about winning the race, minimize as much losses that you can get in those days, because it's going to turn around at some point, hopefully, and you get the lighter days, and that's where you do damage on everybody else. Physically, I think it's just getting in the gym and getting as fit as you can, and so that when those days do come, one, hopefully you're gaining a little bit of weight whilst you're getting fitter and stronger, but at the same time, you're just being able to give everything you have 100% of the time and get out there. Again, that's the unfortunate part of our sport, is so much of it is physics sometimes, like with leverage and weight and all of that, that you can only do so much, but you can definitely work on trying to minimize the amount of damage that happens.
Okay, thanks for that, and I hope that's helpful, Alex. MI, got a question. I think this is a direct message to me, but MI, if you want to come in and ask your question, it'd be great to get you in. Let's see if we can. Is anyone answering to MI? And if not, how would you decide when and what type of training you do next to sailing in the gym? Did you plan your sessions to develop in the sport of CrossFit, or plan your gym sessions or sailing specific so the training helps you get specifically on the water? So you've got two world-class challenges, Anna. How do you allocate the priority?
I think depends where I am really in this season, right? So, but I would say a lot of it was focused on getting better at CrossFit, but also increasing my sailing fitness. So when I was sailing the FX, a lot of that would be pulling and grip strength, you know, so I would do extended sets of pull-ups. I would do farmer's carries for longer. I would hold onto a barbell much longer than I would probably want to. You know, so I would extend and push that side of my training really hard to really get my grip strength quite good. Really work on a bit more of the explosiveness too, because coming from an endurance background, I'm not super explosive. So I would try and like drill a little bit more of explosive movements in my training, more than I would probably have done if I was just focusing purely on my CrossFit training.
Okay, great, thank you. That's so much more deep to dig into these, but I also want to address the questions that are rolling in. Now, Kevin, Kenny, I know I can rely on you to get on the video and ask your question directly. And hey, you even talk the same language as Anna, so that helps too.
Yeah, we're from the same country. Woohoo! Hi, Anna. Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me on. It's funny, just what you just mentioned about everything is virtually what my personal trainer has been trying to get me to do more of. More explosion, more of this, more of that, which is great. But he's not a sailor. So I was wondering, what are common mistakes hiking sailors do in their gym workout program?
Common mistakes. You know, I think it's a bit of making sure you're balancing things. So, you know, I think if you go to a trainer and haven't really explained what you're doing, you know, you'll see a bunch of bench presses and movements that don't necessarily pertain in the way to sailing that you would want it to, right? Like, there's a time and place for sailing. So if you're a laser sailing, you need to put more body, weightlifting, you need to put more weight up top. Yeah, you would do some bench pressing to kind of build some weight. But maybe you would also work a bit more of your back, like your traps and your lats and your delts, to get that weight instead of worrying about bench pressing as much, you know? So I think bench pressing is okay to do every now and then for sailing, but I don't think it needs to be as trained as hard as what some people train it. And again, this is just my opinion. There's, you know, a bunch of experts out there, you know, that might give you different things. Squatting, I would say that we don't generally squat enough. Or not enough, sorry, low enough, I should say. So there's a big difference. But like when you go to squat, a lot of times trainers have us stop squatting here, okay? But if you think about when we're in a boat, you're actually all the way down here, because when you're coming off, rolling off the cockpit, say in a laser, right? You're rolling up and you're coming all the way up as you cross. So being able to have the full range of motion through a movement, I think it's really important. I think a lot of times we don't train the full range of motion on movements. Same goes with pressing, right? If we just press out here, that's great, but not that you need this in sailing, but like making sure that we're pressing there instead and getting the full range of strength instead of just the partial range of strength.
Perfect.
I mean, any follow-ups on that?
Well, you know, when you were doing the squat, the trainer last week just put in, basically said, okay, now I'm going to put a bar and we're going to make this like a limbo contest. And you have to get lower and lower and lower. And it's like, okay, well, I can meet that challenge. So, you know, trying to keep it creatively, you know, so that it's interesting too. You mentioned the first thing we do is get a hiking bench. Do you have a preferred bench or does the homegrown bench work just fine?
I had a homemade one, you know, you can buy one. It just depends if you want to be crafty and make your own, you want to spend money and not have to deal with building one. You know, at the end of the day, it's just about getting hiking. So however you want to do it.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Nice question. Now, Rob Holden, I'm glad that you asked a question because I was going to ambush you anyway. So come in and ask your question. And hi to Vi from Samoa as well, because emerging nations is an increasing focus of Road to Gold. Let's see if Rob can come in and ask a question directly.
Andy, yeah, thanks. I was scared you were going to try and ambush me, so I thought, let me jump in with something before you come with something I can't answer. So, so Anna, yeah, great to hear from you. As Andy has said, I work with the Emerging Nations Group, so it's a lot of kids from countries where there's no infrastructure, there's no gyms in a lot of their places, and also we battle a lot to get the kids motivated to do fitness. A lot of the cultures, fitness isn't in the culture. You know, it's just not part of their culture. I don't know if you've got any creative ideas on how to encourage them. Obviously, let's say if I put a group of kids in front of you that have just got into radial and say, right, motivate them that fitness is important. How would you go about that? Thanks.
Great question. And kids are hard to train, I think. Games, really, kind of making fitness a game. You know, when we have our kids classes here, we make them, obviously for the very young kids, we make it a game. Right? The workout is some sort of game that they kind of play and they get moving that way. As they get older, they start kind of catching on that they're doing a workout. You know, if they're competitive, you could, in a sense, make them compete against each other, but fitness shouldn't necessarily be a competition when we're training. It's about making the movements. But you know, it could be some sort of way to motivate a group of them. Like, let's say you divide the group into two groups and be like, right, this, you each need to do 100 burpees as a group. You guys decide how you want to do it. And the first team that wins, or first team that reaches 100 wins, you know, great. You have four kids. They've each done 25 burpees. That's a start, you know, wall sit competitions, just kind of like a fun, competitive sort of game is the easiest way to get kids kind of going, I think. But making sure that, like, focus on body weight movements and making sure that they're moving correctly is more important than loading weights on their bodies or anything like that. Making sure that they have full range of motion. Like I said, kids are really hard, but I think it's about trying to make it fun for them. And, you know, most competitive kids like games. So I think that's a fun way to go about it.
I love the way competition always comes into it, but I agree with you. Most kids want to compete against each other. So that is a way to push it. But I like the idea of games. It would be interesting if anyone would like to come up with a little resource on fitness games. Some of our fitness gurus, Anna, maybe that's a challenge out to you. A little publication that we can put together, fitness games for sailors.
See what we can do.
You've got to get involved too, Rob. It's your idea. It's easy to come up with the ideas. You've got to help come up with the answers. But I know you've got some great ideas up your sleeve, and I'm sure you're using them already with the young sailors that you work with. So let's stay in touch on that one. And anyone who has been on the Road to Gold program or is currently going through it, you'll know that there is quite a challenging 40-minute session from Hamish, which a lot of people have taken on. And if you can complete that challenge, you know that you're in really good shape. Now, we got a question from Louise. Louise, let's see if we can get you in to ask your question about training for the older athlete.
Sure, Andy. I'll just get my video on there. Not sure whether you can see me.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hi, Anna. Interesting to hear your comments about fitness and all that. So some of us are not in our 20s, and I'm certainly one of them. I've been relatively fit all my life. When I was doing dinghy sailing, you didn't go to the gym, but I was doing all the other sports too. So my question is for the older athletes, do you have any set suggestions on how strength training is appropriate, how fast, you know, maybe the frequency that you've been talking about is too much. And so, because the recovery time is longer, usually. So how do you know from the sense of your body, how much is enough, how much is too much for building your muscles?
So I think a lot of it goes back to how you feel. Right. So when you first get going with it, I think you don't, like I said, you don't dive in head first full on. And I don't suggest anybody does that straight away, because you'll do great for a week and then you're going to be so tired and sore that you're just not going to continue. Right. So maybe you start with 2 days a week and you do that for 2 weeks and then you take it to 3 days a week and let the body adjust to it. And I think, you know, it's more about making sure that we're moving correctly initially and not worrying about weights that we do. You know, so let's say it's been a long time since we've done squats or something like that. Yeah, we squat super light. We work on the form and technique because ultimately that's going to make you stronger than loading a barbell up super heavy, trying to do some squats, doing them with bad form, you know, that's risking injury and everything like that. It's better to do it light, really nail the technique and form. And then from there, once you're comfortable with that, then you slowly start weights as you go and you go with how you feel. You know, you listen to your body. So you could go, if your body's feeling okay, you could go 3 days a week, you know, take a day off, go 2 days a week, take a day off. When we have people come into our gym and they ask us what their training should be, that's kind of the pattern we follow. It gives them 5 days a week, but it gives them 2 built-in rest days. You know, some people just for their lives, they do 5 days on and then take the weekend off. So it's a little bit of, you know, what works in your life and your schedule. But I say the most important part is slowly building it up. And then the recovery, yeah, it does take longer as we get older. And, you know, making sure we are hydrating, making sure we are getting the good food in our body right away. We are fueling up before we go to the gym, fueling up after we go to the gym, making sure we're eating enough throughout the day to allow our body to recover. Stretching is definitely important. Making sure that we are stretching, continuously stretching to keep our body loose and mobile so that when we do go back the next day, our body's gonna move the way we want it to move.
Thank you, good suggestions. I'll have to adjust my plans a little bit. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Louise, thank you very much. We are almost out of time. We got a couple more questions, but we don't really have a lot of time to go into them. Jan Chu, hi to you, and you've got a great question, but I'm going to refer you to Pete Cunningham's video, an interview that we did with him a year or so back, and it's within the Chapter 2 resources. And Pete Cunningham, who's an Olympic and America's Cup trainer, goes into that whole challenge of weight gain while gaining fitness at the same time too. And Matilda, I'm sorry, we've run out of time for your question. And Anna, there's so much more I want to ask you. And as far as I can tell, you are the last American to win a gold medal in sailing. And that is something that some of our American sailors have asked us from time to time, is what road back for USA at Olympic level. So in 20 seconds, give us your elevator pitch for how America is going to get back on top of Olympic sailing.
Well, we've got a really good system in place now, a really good program. The squads are all really working hard together. And I think that's what we split away from that for a while. So now we're all back together. We're pushing each other hard. And we've got great coaching staff in play that's really dialing in what's important now to build towards the Olympics down the road.
Squad, interesting word there, Hamish. Squad, and that's one of the observations of some of the American sailors on Road to Gold, is that squad mentality has been absent from the USA setup. So Just comment on that and comment on what you've learned from Anna for the last 60 minutes.
Yeah, Anna, thanks so much. I've learned lots of golden nuggets. I just love the games thing. The fact that you're in a game makes so much sense to me. So, you know, the CrossFit games, it comes through, you know, that, you know, when we do our fitness, we need to keep it fun. We need to be into it. And we need to get across our whole body. So thanks for a great insight.
And Anna, I hope you've enjoyed it. We've thrown you in the deep end, ask you some difficult questions. Thanks for taking it on, and your passion for both of your sports shines through. What can we see from you in the next year or so?
So I'm working with the US Radial Squad, working with them traveling around. So I'm excited to get them going on the international scene. And for me, I'm going to be keeping up my fitness the best I can whilst we're traveling around the world.
I don't doubt that you'll manage that. Well, Anna, thank you very much to you. Thank you to everybody who asked really interesting questions. And as ever, 60 minutes is never enough. But it's as Anna said about training, it's better to finish wanting a little bit more rather than exhaust the mind and the body. So we hope you the appetite to dig back into Road to Gold if you're a member, and if you're not a member, maybe sign up to Road to Gold and find out what all the fuss is about. Thanks for all the praise that's pouring in for Anna's session. Really appreciate that, and we will see you next week for another session, and that is going to be Chapter 3, boat handling, and we are going to have Olympic medalist and America's Cup sailor Chris Draper for that session. So we really look forward to seeing you then. Have a great week, and we will see you in a week's time. Bye for now.